The following programming is sponsored by the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Positively Pro-Life, a podcast brought to you by the Pennsylvania Pro-Life Federation. Positively Pro-Life brings you inspirational stories, important legislative updates, and informative interviews as we restore and strengthen a culture of life. I'm Bonnie Finnerty, Education Director at the Federation, and I am joined by my esteemed colleague, Maria Gallagher, the Legislative Director. Hello, Maria.
Hello, Bonnie. It's great to be with you today.
Great to be with you. Maria, I know we both feel that young people are an especially powerful segment of the pro-life movement. They bring a passion and energy to the movement that is contagious. Today, we have a remarkable young woman as our guest, whose passion for life is certainly infectious in the best way. Her name is Aiden Lincoln, and she hails from Easton, Pennsylvania. Adopted from China as an infant, Aiden is now an outspoken advocate for adoption. As our listeners and viewers may be aware, a great number of Chinese babies, particularly girls, have been adopted by American families over the last few decades due to China's one-child policy that had been strictly enforced until recently. According to the State Department, from 1999 to 2018, American families adopted almost 82,000 children from China. Aiden is one of those beautiful, precious babies, all grown up now and making her mark on the world. And we can't wait for her to share her story. In addition, Maria's legislative update will focus on pro-life efforts to counteract the Biden abortion agenda. But first, we'll kick off the podcast with some pro-life inspiration. And just like our guest this week, we're celebrating young people in the pro-life movement. I want to tell you about three encounters I had recently that left me awestruck by the zeal of pro-life teens. First was the young woman who knocked on my door a few Saturdays ago. She was canvassing for the Susan B. Anthony list, making sure Pennsylvania residents understood where political candidates stood on life issues. I let her do her thing before telling her that I too work in the pro-life movement. Despite a brisk, windy afternoon, she and I had a long conversation outside about abortion and how to effectively share the truth with the public. As we talked, I was practically moved to tears by her dedication, knocking on doors, risking rejection, risking angry reactions as she moved from house to house, neighborhood to neighborhood. Now, she did occasionally find an ally like me, but sometimes she had to work really hard to open eyes to the reality of abortion. She told me of an instance just that day where she and her canvassing partner talked with a decidedly pro-choice woman for over an hour. By the end, that woman expressed doubt in her original position and pledged to do more research. As if trekking through unfamiliar neighborhoods on a cold winter weekend wasn't enough, I then learned that this young woman actually traveled over an hour and a half to do this boots on the ground educational outreach, and that she was still a senior in high school. A few days later, I received a plea from a colleague. Her friend's daughter, just an eighth grader in public school, was experiencing pushback from her peers about her pro-life conviction. She planned to write a paper about abortion and its devastating effects on women and society, but she needed to talk through some common mantras that she was hearing from her classmates, such as my body, my choice, and it's not a baby yet. This young lady and I were able to talk by phone for almost an hour. At a time in her life when peer pressure is reportedly the greatest, she was not backing down from her deeply held belief that life is sacred and worth protecting. She was willing to even endure unkind remarks from classmates. She just needed more, so to speak, ammunition to fight the good fight, facts and figures, science and stories, to show them that abortion is not empowering or compassionate or justified. In a follow-up email, I armed her with several good resources, books, videos, articles, websites, things that she can use as she grows in her pro-life advocacy. I was in awe of her courage, and I have no doubt that she'll be planting seeds in the hearts of many of her peers today and in the years to come. And then even more teen voices for life inundated me. Last week marked a deadline for our annual pro-life essay contest for grades 7 through 12. Hundreds of essays are currently stacked on my desk. While some teachers incorporated the contest into their classroom assignments, other essays were submitted by individual students. We received essays from public, private, Catholic, Christian, vocational, and homeschool students. One young lady, a public school student, wrote and emailed her essay after going to an educational talk offered by a local pregnancy center. She was so moved by what she learned, she entered our contest that night. Some students emailed their essays, which I in turn acknowledged, thanking the student for being a voice for life. One young lady replied, and I'll quote from her email, "You don't have to thank me for submitting an essay. I thank you for giving me an opportunity to be able to share my opinion about abortion. The topic is very important to me, and I want to help any way I can. And this contest gave me the chance to get my voice out. So I'd write this essay any day if it meant helping the women of our state." Now, while I'm supposed to be the educator, these amazing teens are teaching me, and perhaps all of us seasoned pro-lifers, a very valuable lesson. Don't ever let our pro-life flame grow dim. Stay strong, stay bright, and when it's darkest, continue to spread the light of life. Maria.
That was so beautiful, Bonnie. Thank you so very much. The following is from a news release from National Right to Life. Recently, President Joe Biden addressed the nation in his first State of the Union address. In his first year in office, the attack on unborn babies and their mothers has reached unprecedented levels. It is ironic that President Biden talked about preserving maternal health care in the same breath as advocating for the destruction of a mother's unborn baby, said Carol Tobias, president of National Right to Life. But it is not surprising. Joe Biden's first year in office has been an all-out assault on unborn children and their mothers. Tobias continued, "President Biden is the most pro-abortion president in history. He has evolved into a virulent supporter of abortion on demand, solidified by his record number of pro-abortion executive orders, reversal of pro-life policies, and pro-abortion legislation sanctioned by the White House. The Biden-Harris administration and its allies in the Democratic Party have made abortion extremism the core issue of the party. Radical pro-abortion actions by this White House include supporting the so-called Women's Health Protection Act, which would have quashed nearly all existing protective state laws. In addition, this legislation would have prohibited states from adopting new protective laws in the future, even laws specifically upheld as constitutionally permissible by the U.S. Supreme Court. With this bill, elective abortion would have become the procedure that always must be facilitated, never delayed, never impeded to the slightest degree. Biden's first year in office has been a never-ending onslaught on the lives of unborn children, and this administration has taken every opportunity to entrench pro-abortion policies, Tobias said. For more about the state of abortion policy and laws in the United States, National Right to Life's annual State of Abortion in the United States report can be accessed at their website at nrlc.org. Bonnie.
Thank you, Maria, for that important update. It is my pleasure to introduce today's guest. Aidan Lincoln is an adoption advocate, freelance journalist, student, and social media influencer. Adopted from China as an infant, she grew up in Easton, Pennsylvania. She is here today to share her story and her efforts to promote and advocate for adoption. Welcome, Aidan.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really happy to be here today.
We are so happy to have you. Aiden, let's start with what you know about your birth in China.
So I was abandoned at birth and the police found me at a train station, less than a day old with my umbilical cord still attached to me. And they sent me to an orphanage where I spent the first almost year of my life before I was adopted by an amazing, loving family here in Pennsylvania.
And so, Aiden, how was it that you came to live here in Pennsylvania? Did the family actually go to China to come to your rescue?
Yeah. My mom really wanted a girl after having two boys. My two older brothers are 24 and 30. So they said my mom and my dad were either going to try again to see if this third time was a charm and they were going to have like a girl. But they knew other people who had adopted from China and had an amazing experience. So they went through my local adoption agency, actually located in Pennsylvania, Adoptions from the Heart. And in less than a year, they were hopping on a plane and flying to China to get me. They stayed a week in China and they came back here with me.
That's such a powerful story. And why did you decide to share that story with the world?
Adoption and the trauma that comes with it isn't often talked about in the media. You know, it's often sunshines and rainbows, this picture perfect photo. And yes, adoption is amazing and it saves lives, but it also comes with like a lot of heartache and struggles for the adoptee and sometimes like for the birth mother and sometimes for the adopted families too. So I wanted to other people to understand me and what I was going through. I actually was going through a really bad school day my junior year of high school, and one of my teachers told me, "So what, over half your generation suffers from anxiety, get over it." And that really hit me hard because it took me right back to my early elementary school years where I was struggling to get people to understand me. I was lashing out at other people and just really overall like not feeling like I fit in. I don't look like my family. And I really struggled with that. So I wrote my entire story out, what I had gone through and why I was feeling this way, and like what he had said really hurt me. And it really opened his eyes. And that made me realize, hey, like this can change people's like view. So I sent it to my teachers and then my family. And then I sent it to Live Action and it got published and then it just blew off from there.
Incredible. Yeah. That's just really amazing because many people, I think, would struggle for years to get published on a website like Live Action, but you did it when you were still very young.
Yeah. It was October of 2020. So yeah, and then like from there, I had hired a publicist for like a brief like period, like for like one, to send out one,
like a press release?
Yeah, press release. Yeah, and then from there, like I do it on my own, and I've had a bunch of these like speaking engagements and podcasts that I'm gonna be on, and that I also like write it for various publications. And the messages I've gotten from it make it all like worth it.
Oh, that's wonderful. And to what extent do you believe that adoption is a loving option?
100%. I always say adoption saves lives and forever changes them. It not only gives birth mothers who may not be able to provide a good life for their child an opportunity to have one, or a single person or single parent who may want to have a child who can't, the chance to be a parent. It also forever changes the lives of everyone involved. I'm forever grateful for adoption, and my family is too. I wouldn't have it any other way.
Now, while you are an enthusiastic advocate for adoption, you're also very realistic about it. What do you want people hoping to adopt to know?
To be patient and not lose hope. It's often a long emotional process. That doesn't happen overnight, For my parents, it was a very quick process, though. That was luck. Just know that there's somebody out there, there's a child or a person out there waiting for their forever home, and it could be you. So just don't lose hope.
Those are wise words. Now, international adoption from China has stemmed from the one-child policy that the country once had. Now, China is realizing they have a shortage of young people, and they're encouraging families to have 3 children at least. What are your thoughts on this?
I have mixed feelings on this because I'm very glad that they are finally realizing that families should be kept together. That's ultimately the best option. But it also means that if I wasn't adopted or if I was still with my birth family, that I wouldn't get the opportunities that I've gotten here in the United States. And that means that other people like me wouldn't have met or experienced the amazing things from adoption. So ultimately, I have mixed feelings. I would say ultimately that I'm like more happy, but I'm also like sad about that. Like, I hope that makes sense, but it ultimately means that a lot of people are going to miss out on opportunities that they may have gotten from adoption because China is still a developing country.
And if you had the opportunity, what would you say to your birth parents?
I would just say thank you for that, like making one of the hardest decisions a parent can make for their child. And I would want to hug them. I would more just like, I don't think I have the words as much as I know what I'd want to say. I think if I met them or I saw them, like my words would be taken out of my mouth. And I just want to like see them. The chance to see someone who looks like me would make me speechless. Like,
Aiden, for many years, we had neighbors next door, 2 beautiful young women adopted from China that played with my children and were almost like my own children. They were at my house all the time and I watched them grow up, and they had the benefit in our community of gathering with other adoptees from China from time to time. Did you have that opportunity as well growing up?
Yeah. There's an organization, I believe it's based in New York, called Families with Children from China. And typically they have like these monthly like dinners in different places in Pennsylvania and New Jersey. There's different like local like chapters. And that was like one of the opportunities where I got to meet people who are also adopted. And then my parents also got to meet other families. And it's a really great organization. They do a dinner and they have like local chapters that, and then not only that, but I knew like people, like I occasionally knew people or came across people who are also adopted. Like my coworker is adopted. And I know like a few other people who are adopted.
Can you tell us a little bit more about what you are doing to promote adoption? You mentioned some of the podcasts and some of the exposure you've had so far. Tell us what you're doing and where people can find you and what your future goals are.
You can find me on my website, aidenlincoln.com, as well as at aidenlincoln across all major social media platforms. I'm currently doing these podcasts. I write my story if I get the chance and I send it to publications, like kind of in a way begging for them to like publish it or see if they can like get me on it as a guest. And I'm currently going to school for journalism at my local community college, but next year I hope to go for music business and hopefully law school to become an entertainment lawyer in the music industry.
Wow. Do you foresee yourself perhaps one day considering adoption?
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely want my own, like to have my own child, but I definitely could see myself adopting.
Do you think that you would adopt from China or from the US?
Probably China, because like I kind of want like somebody like I can, because I've been there, so I can see myself.
Sure.
So you have traveled back to China?
I'm sorry?
Have you traveled back to China then?
No.
Okay.
And I don't really want to right now.
Okay. Yeah, probably
waiting,
right now.
Like no one wants to. I'll wait a few years.
Mm-hmm. Right. One of the questions that I had was, we may have some older people who are tuning into this podcast who may not know what a social influencer is. Can you tell me what a social influencer is and how you became one?
Yeah, sure. It just means, well, it means like different things to different people, because I would call myself a micro social media influencer. It just means you influence a certain amount of people. Like, it could be you have 5,000 to 10,000 followers. It's typically micro. And when you get like bigger, like Charli D'Amelio, she has like hundreds of millions of like followers across all of her social media platforms. And she has been able to make a career out of it. And she's the most followed person on TikTok. So it just means that you influence a certain amount of people, or you're at a point where you can work with brands where they're going to send you products, or they're going to pay you to review your products because they see it as like a marketing tool, and you reach a certain amount of people and you can quote unquote influence them into something.
And what are you trying to influence people about, you personally?
So definitely like adoption advocacy is a big thing that I'm doing, but also occasionally I'll do like product reviews, because when I get sent products, but that's just more something like I plopped in my like bio. I don't consider it a full-time job or anything like that, but it's really like fun to do, or really fun to like get products from companies, which I occasionally will, and like review them or say like provide a discount code for something like that.
And I studied journalism in school. I'm wondering why you decided to study journalism.
So right now I'm getting my associate degree in journalism, and it's because I didn't have my intended major. I wanted to go, obviously in the future, I'm gonna go for music business, hopefully. And journalism just, it was at a point in my life where I was writing my story and I was just starting off college, and I thought like it would be something that would be like, something I would enjoy and something that would benefit me in the future.
Aiden, I was reading some of the articles you wrote, and I was struck by the journey you had growing up through school, because I'm a former educator, former classroom teacher. And you talk about one teacher in particular who made a huge difference in your life, kind of turned things around. Would you be willing to share that story with us?
Yeah, absolutely. So in my early like elementary school years, I really struggled. I struggled at not only in school, but also at home, just fitting in, trying to get other people to understand me, the way I acted out. And I wasn't trying to be like resentful or like mean or rude. I just didn't know how else to respond. And that's typical for a lot of people who have gone through the trauma of adoption and other things. I saw this quote somewhere that adoptees have already lost their first family and their first like culture. And I was like, okay, yeah, that's like true. I can relate to that. And as like a 5-year-old, 3-year-old or 2-year-old, they're not going to like know how to respond to something. Like, they're put in this whole new environment. So the way I responded was acting out. And my parents quickly learned that that wasn't going to work. Like, traditional discipline isn't going to work, and it typically doesn't for somebody who's gone through that trauma. But my school really struggled with me in the beginning. In my kindergarten, first and second grade years, my teachers just put me on timeout. They ignored me, sent me to the principal's office, yelled back at me. And that just didn't work for me. I just yelled back even more, and I just had like raging meltdowns. And I would get physical. So before third grade, my school realized that they needed to do more. So they kept changing my 504 and my IEP around. And they chose a very special person as my third grade teacher, Crystal Cartersell. And I would say she forever changed my life for the better, just like I changed hers. And she, instead of yelling at me or putting me in timeout or just telling me to stop talking, she would hold me, let me cry on her like a baby, or let me fidget. And she never sent me to the principal's office. She never yelled at me. Instead, she consoled me. And we had this little journal that I would, if I had a question that I couldn't say in the middle of class, I would write it down And at the end of the day, we journal back and forth. And that connection really changed me and really helped me realize that I'm not the bad kid. I'm not like worthless, if that makes sense. I'm not like different, but I really do have this person who cares about me and is really willing to take that extra step to help me grow and learn. And today, I'm forever grateful for her. We're still very close, and she's like one of my really good friends today.
What a tremendous blessing that you two found each other.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was like, I think it was like fate, like God put us in this path to like meet each other and change our lives.
It's such a beautiful, beautiful story. And I wonder, do you have any final thoughts for our listeners?
No, I really enjoyed talking with you though.
We enjoyed talking with you as well. We've been speaking with Aiden Lincoln, an adoption advocate, freelance journalist, student, and social media influencer. Adopted from China as an infant, she grew up in Easton, Pennsylvania. She shared her story and her efforts to promote and advocate for adoption. And very quickly, Bonnie, I think you have a couple of announcements.
Yes, before we go, I just want to remind our listeners of our oratory contest. We heard about our essay contest earlier today. Our oratory or speech contest deadline is April 15th, and that is for high school students grades 9 through 12. Any high school student in Pennsylvania who would like to submit a pro-life speech, we need a copy of the written speech, and we also need a file of the actual speech. And the details for all of that could be found on our website under students. Or please email me at lifelines@paprolife.org if you have any questions about that. We look forward to getting many wonderful pro-life speeches. And in addition, Maria.
And I think that does it for today. Thank you so very much. And remember, there's always a reason to choose life.